Glenn Prosfit, honorable member, the meeting is convened to receive a report from the department on the progress made on forensic investigation in local government. This matter is now standing briefly for some time. We've been waiting for this briefing for some time. Honorable Gordon, when was the minister, initiated some of these, but thank you. issue that we'll deal with it. Of course, colleagues, we must invite our minister, Honorable Mkhize, to make general remarks and make other issue that he may want to raise, the platform will be given to him. And then, in the meeting of that, then we'll allow then the department probably to assist us on the report and have discussion on that report and then move to the second matter and have discussion on that and then generally we'll discuss on how do we approach this. It's almost an attack to Parliament by the chief that's supposed to have come to us. Then how do we deal with that? Let me try another test to do so. Let me take this opportunity to invite the minister. As I said, I gave Honorable Father the most welcome. We are meeting with a team that is very good, very difficult team, but it's a very good team at the same time. And then engagement with you is going to be very robust, but also very diligent and also with respect for the role that we are playing, all of us. We always move from the premise, Honorable Minister, that all of us are members of Parliament. We are members of Parliament. There are specific roles for Parliament. That role Parliament must execute without fear or favor. Also, we expect everyone to come to committees in Parliament to account with respect and diligence. And then, of course, it's a very robust engagement because it's a political committee. Always very robust, but we hope that it's going to be very helpful for us and we are most welcome. And give you the platform, take your time, give you the issue that you may want to do, that issues, general issues or specific issues that you want to do. Let me invite you, Honorable Minister, to take us through. We are invited.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Member of the Portfolio Committee, members of the media, staff, and of course my Deputy Minister, and the Director General, the senior officials and staff of the Court Department. Thank you for giving us the opportunity just to make some comments. Firstly, just to indicate that one has been humbled with the appointment to serve as a minister in this department. We also do understand the relationship between the department, the minister, the department, and the portfolio committee and parliament as a whole. We do believe that it's a hallmark of democracy that the executive should be able to come and account to Parliament through the prescribed committees such as this one. And therefore I want to just pledge my commitment to working very closely with the committee and to be available to share the information and account wherever necessary. And I understand that such a process of accounting is in the interest of improving service delivery and the best way to serve our people. And I also understand that all of us here in Parliament might be belonging to different political parties, but that all of those members are each representatives of the diversity of the views, political views and beliefs of our people in terms of who should represent them best. And so I think from where we sit, I want to commit my department in the same way that my predecessors would have done, to always be available to respond to the calls, to appear, and to also furnish the information with the honesty and the professionalism that the process requires. I also believe that working with Parliament, it's an issue that we should say is sacrosanct. If you need information, we must provide the information. It's as simple and straightforward as all that. And so where there are queries and where you feel that there are shortcomings, we'll be prepared to listen and then go out to seek to correct as much as we can. The second aspect therefore refers to the fact that I have had several meetings to get briefings from our department, and I have to apologize on behalf of my other colleague, Minister, Deputy Minister Babela, who, because of the morning, we have to accept and understand that he's not in a position to be with us, as much as, of course, he's constrained in his family circumstances, but he's very supportive and continues to feed us in with advices, information, and ideas. And so we are with him, even though he's not here with us. We have also had a meeting with a number of the officials in the department, and I've actually met the whole department. I must say that I've been impressed with the vibrancy, enthusiasm, and the energy that is actually demonstrated by the members of staff. And they're all very excited with this new era of change and optimism and hope. And so we hope that you will also go out there and inject the same spirit to the various stakeholders with whom we relate, and particularly in supporting and activating local government sphere and traditional affairs area to work together to build the most efficient service delivery machinery for our people. From where we sit, we think that a number of issues need our urgent attention. I think the top of the agenda is ensuring good governance and efficiency in the management or running of the service delivery mechanisms within the local government space. And so we want to work very closely in support of municipalities and provinces to ensure that we deal with dysfunctional municipalities where there are management lapses. I've been fully briefed about the extent to which we can assist and intervene as the COCTA machinery to help to improve good governance at that level. We also want to focus on the area of bankrupt municipalities, where we're finding that there are financial mismanagement issues or problems of irregular expenditure and so on. We have therefore, as part of the whole focus on back to basics, I felt that we want to be taking tours to visit various municipalities, provinces, to discuss issues where they need support and also try and create turnaround strategies to help them to improve the management of the municipal administration, as well as deal with the issues of sound financial management. In this case, we also want to be looking very closely at the issues of the audit outcomes and discussing with all the role players, particularly premiers and finance MECs, together with the COCTA MECs, to see how we can together as a new structure, turnaround strategies, revenue enhancement mechanisms, and also improvement of the financial management systems inside the municipalities. I think the big issue, which is why this meeting is being called, has also been about this very strong fight against corruption and mismanagement that we want to commit ourselves to. And this, for that reason, we will go a little bit into this report in the interest of our commitment to fighting corruption. So we will get to that particular issue, because that's the subject of this discussion. Other than that, we also want to embrace the spirit of change and optimism that our president has actually called upon all South Africans to work together in the spirit of Tuma Mina. And here we want to then look at a number of other issues where municipalities and the local government in general should be able to assist. And then that deals with various issues of, firstly, just to make sure that the issue of back to basics, cleanliness of the cities, good spirit, good management, and all of those issues, and the effectiveness of communities, whether it be the individual citizens or ratepayer associations, to be able to impact on the way that the municipalities are run. And I think that it's a spirit that you need to foster in the context of an inclusive society where everybody must be respected. expected that it must play a role in that. Then, of course, there are issues that have been raised very strongly by the President related to the questions of issues of food security, the issues of agrarian revolution, an area where we believe that it's important for us to give support as the municipalities and the local governments here to deal with those issues. In addition, there are also strong matters that must be followed in relation to economic recovery, ensuring promotion of investment, inclusive growth, and so deal with the issues of unemployment, and we have to play a role in the various interministerial committees where we're participating. We've already been in meetings with the Minister of Small Business, and we've placed our support to say where COPTA should be playing a role, we should be able to do that. So having said that, I want to then say the other area that has been raised by particularly the House of Traditional Leaders and the various representatives of traditional leaders has been the issue of the relationship between municipalities, government, and the institution of traditional leadership. At this there is committed that we need to go out there to create a plan of how we're going to respond to some of the issues that they've raised, and we'll certainly be doing that, and we'll be giving the President feedback very quickly in terms of what plans we have to deal with this. So we are committing ourselves not only to deal with the issues, but to be out there to engage all the stakeholders and participate in discussions and engagements to make sure that we can try and find common solutions for everyone. So that for me should be a kind of pledge to you that we want to work with you as we try and turn things around and also try and enhance and improve governance, fighting corruption, and also going out there to deal with the problems of poverty, unemployment, fighting hunger, and ensure that we create a situation where local government really is seen as the center of the people's power, where everyone can actually be, able to feel that their voice is actually heard, and that they are able to receive the services that they really deserve. And in the process, I think we should also be working very hard on the area of early warning system so that we can pick up any where there are areas of distress before we get eruptions that we've seen in terms of service delivery, protests, and all of that. Having said so, members, I want to say thank you for giving me that opportunity just to give you a sense of how we see the department. Let me come to the reports that we've been asked to table here. I will start by indicating to you again our commitment in the fight against corruption, that if any of the members here believe that this remains a priority, then they've got a partner in us as Minister, Deputy Minister, and the entire department. We're going to be working fairly closely here together with our interministerial committees on the fight against corruption, and we're very committed to sharing as much information that will help us to deal with the scourge of corruption. We have been asked to come and table the issue of the forensic report, and I must admit up front, Honorable Chairperson, that it's a very difficult issue to present to you. It's difficult, but that's actually the reason why I think both of my previous colleagues found it not easy to come and table because of the way that the matter is, and I will indicate to you so you will understand why it might have been a bit tricky how we table the matter. But what we intend to talk about here are probably two aspects of the fight against corruption. There's a whole issue of forensic reports which have been done by various provinces and municipalities. Our ex-minister, my colleague, Minister Gordon, actually realized that there were so many of these investigations that have been done. They were lying all over different municipalities and provinces, and he went all out to ask all the members of the family COPTA to bring back all his reports to the central board so we could look at them. And I'm told that a total of 110 of those reports came through, and I'm sure the members have been briefed on that. Now the real challenge was to sit down and try and analyze these reports. The process of analyzing these reports has been done, and what we have not done, we have not brought you all those reports. We just wanted to give you a sense of what is going on in there. But the nature of the issue is a bit complex because the people who have to act are in various, tiers of government and different departments. And so to collate all of that into one becomes a very big challenge. But to present it is even a bigger problem to you. So you will understand when I go on how that becomes a bit of a challenge. But a number of things have happened here. So you will hear of police investigations, a special investigation unit, asset forfeiture unit. You will hear about courts, that there would have been court cases here, but also there are actions, disciplinary actions that would have taken place inside the various municipalities and provinces. All of this creates a very, wide and dispersed set of information to bring together to come and table to this meeting, which becomes a problem. Another aspect that has also been done is also another strong weapon in the fight against corruption is a database for officials that would have been implicated in wrongdoing. Now that database has been established, and therefore now every week every municipality has to feed in new employees that are going to be tested against this database so that we can actually refer them to the provisions of such. I think the officials will explain that it has got some kind of cooling period that you can't be back until some such a time, depending on the offense at that time. And so we'll get a little bit into that. But we also think that if you can be given time, we need to go back and get some of the departments that we can come together. Well, some of the information we're going to take to doesn't belong to the culture department. It belongs to the law enforcement agencies. Now they're very sensitive about what we talk about, what we don't. I will make an appeal up front, Chairperson, and as we demonstrate, we'll give you a summary, which is very brief. But just to say, the real report is here. Here we've got about 500 names. These are 500 cases of what has happened. And that's why the colleagues will find it difficult to come and give you the report. But none of this must go to the media. So we will not be able to read the names of individuals, and we are going to show, we will actually give the copies for the members to inspect. If you want the further information, we can do, but we can't afford this going to the media, otherwise we'll break our relationship with the investigation officers who feel that we're too curious and we're compromising this thing because we want to expose all the names of people that are under investigation. I think it's fair. So I will give you a sense. When the presentation will go, for example, of the 500, let me just give you a sense, I'm not doing the presentation. They will be able to say to the committee, in order that's rest, case number 315/4/2013, this is Mahlaleng municipality. Then there are names, and I will ask them that they don't read the names. Then they will then say, the suspect was working at a cashier, as a cashier at Machabeli or the last rest office. The suspect sold prepaid electricity to the public. The suspect misused the system to do more than one banking batches per day. The suspect only banked the first banking batch of money and took the second and third banking batch off for the day for himself. And the value is 919,965. The current status is finalized. What happened? The accused was sentenced on 2017, November 23. The reference number here, 11/8/2014. The prosecutor was money. The case was transferred to Commercial Crimes Unit. The court has been told to be held in Virginia, in Free State. The Commercial Crime Unit is in charge, and Warrant Officer Gross is in charge. His telephone number is this. Now, that's one case. Now we've got 500 of them. So we will be in your hands. We can walk from case 1 to 500, where you can tell us where you want us to stop. You can ask us to look for a particular city, or a particular municipality, or a particular case. We'll try and do that. We can give you the case file for you to inspect, but please can get it back. And therefore, the point which we want to make to you is that when my colleagues took time to come and present, this was the reason. It is not as easy, but we understand the importance of this issue for the portfolio committee and therefore want to cooperate as much as possible, but we must also be able to indicate that we will be also going around meeting the premiers and the MECs, and we will go through these cases and look how much has been done here, why has there not been progress here. That is the role COPTA can play, but we cannot, we don't have an enforcement role. We're not having a problem with it. We're just saying that the role that we have to play is go out and coordinate and propagate that these actions must be taken, and then we'll find out if there are any problems. We will therefore, as I said, meet with the other ministers so that we can table this issue together. I thought I must give you that sense of background as you deal with it. You mentioned something by the way, I think what's important to mention here is that in order to make this work the way it's been, just also to reduce the problem of the relationship, the SIU has actually seconded officials to work in COPTA, firstly to help our team to analyze the reports with a mind of how you deal with the criminal investigation. And in addition, they are also going to be training more of the COPTA staff to deal with what all really that's dealing with issues of corruption inside COPTA. That's going to be doing more of that work. And so they are actually getting a backing from the SIU in terms of technical understanding, support, as well as in the process, also themselves being experts in being able to analyze what's going to, you know, continue with this kind of work. So from where we sit, we would like to table the report that takes you through how this forensics, and I think the members must keep in mind, in the report we table, we'll talk about the forensic reports. So it's about the forensic reports that were tabled here. Then when we come here, we talk about everything that's being investigated, so that the members have a full view of the kind of work that's being done in the process. Honorable Chairperson, I'd like to hold it at that, and then maybe ask that the Director General can make introductions of the team, and then in the process, just assign the one official that's going to be taking us through. And of course, it's your meeting, so you will indicate, once the summary has been done and they start going through this, you can indicate that look, you want less, you want more, and then we are in your hands. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Minister here, the honorable members of the committee. I think with me on the official side, I have the DDG, Mr. Tewokong Mr. Shubin. He is responsible for ID, Institutional Development Branch. And then next to me is Mr. Nkashe, he is the Chief Director responsible for anti-corruption. The other stuff. Maybe they can just quickly introduce themselves, Chairman. Subjudicate, which means that we would then go into a situation. the ministers already outlined. So we will be given a direction of whether we give you a copy and then the members browse through, or whether we should actually make a presentation of the 500-page presentation. So we will be given a direction by each other.
But this year, I think what you should do, of course, it will take us through 500 cases that are not to be there overall. Because bear in mind that meeting of parliament are all held to come. And then no one can stop people talking about that outside the meeting, because meetings are open for parliament. I think the 500 names are fine. It's just a brief report that will give us for the statements of the forest devoted throughout our country. But as you do that, also, you will also assist us to understand which cities and towns that are able to implement decisions that are taken there. Because the bigger issue that was faced was that we are doing all this work, we spend a lot of money, reports are received, but there's no implementation. Then of the reports. Therefore, if you are able to indicate some of those areas, what are the issues, and then implementing the forensic report, and then the other issues general that you wanted to know. The 500 one, we can really not go with details on that, because the minister is explaining there are a lot of other issues there, but also may find that there will be people who may be very innocent, because everybody is innocent until proven guilty. Therefore, public meetings like these, they only talk about members, but they can't tell the public what to say about some of these issues. I think we must protect the integrity of the system that you all of us have had in here. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, you'll allow the Chief Director responsible for anti-corruption just to take us through the published version of the report.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable committee members, Minister and Deputy Minister, DG colleagues, and protocol officers. I would give a background that in 2014, the department requested the provinces for municipalities to submit copies of forensic reports commissioned for municipalities since 120 copies of forensic reports were received from provinces and municipalities. Out of those 120 copies received, 110 have been assessed. The assessment of forensic reports was conducted in line with the good governance pillars of back to basics approach to adopted by government. Reports were received from the following provinces. Eastern Cape provided the office with 34 cases, 44 forensic reports. Free State provided 5 reports. Gauteng provided 2 forensic reports. KwaZulu-Natal provided 19 reports. Limpopo provided 12 reports. Mpumalanga 15. And Northern Cape provided 3. Northwest provided 4. And then Western Cape provided 16. The objective of the assessment of these forensic reports was to assist the department to facilitate criminal, civil, and disciplinary action emanating from forensic reports recommendations. Assessment of the extent in which provinces and municipalities are implementing recommendations emanating from forensic reports. To identify other areas of corruption and related offences that require focused attention. The principles of the assessment were as follows: to identify reports where criminal and civil matters can be pursued within the assistance of law enforcement agencies, identify reports where internal disciplinary processes can be pursued, identify forensic reports to
direct that are disturbing you. I think what you should do, if possible for us, is then take this day before, just to take us through the implemented 2015, not implemented at all, what are the challenges there. And that just give us a sense of it. Council, because the Council first must receive a report and adopt a report. So we that must accept the report. And then some of these areas, the problem, because the report has been done, conducted, but no one meets at the Council level to say, no, we agree, this is the problem that we are faced with. This is the process and procedure that are going to assist us to resolve some of these issues. That's a general feeling about this issue.
Thanks, Chair. Let me just go with province by province, maybe.
Yeah.
In short, Mpumalanga, the municipality there is Makat Municipality, which was, the case was a protracted matter. And then the matter is still on the side. And then also the other case in Mpumalanga, which is Tembahali Municipality. Tembesile Municipality also is a court case, which has been provincially withdrawn. The other one is Felix Kasimi, also is a local municipality in Mpumalanga. Theft and fraud related issue was also provisionally withdrawn. And the last one in Mpumalanga, not the last one, but Tabachwewu local municipality also was fraud and corruption. The matter is under investigation. And then Mpumalanga, Emalahleni local municipality, the matter is fraud, still awaiting the decision from the Special Commercial Crime Investigation Unit to determine whether they continue the investigation or not. And then the Free State, Sitwatom local municipality, the matter there is fraud. And then the matter is under investigation also. KwaZulu Natal, Echekweni Metro fraud related matter. And then the matter there is awaiting decision by Special Prosecution Committee to decide on the matter. And then the Eastern Cape one is Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. There it's a fraud related matter. Human rights case is already opened. The case number there is 405-08-2011. The accused were still found guilty, and then there's still details regarding sentences to be finalized. KwaZulu Natal, other cases here in Kuala, fraud and corruption related issues. The matter is under investigation. In Gauteng is Midval local municipality, and then the matter there is fraud related issue, and then the matter is still under investigation. Also on page 6 on the Eastern Cape, there's Nelson Mandela Bay, and then the allegation was various allegations of corruption related offense on page 1 forensic reports. The status there, the reports there were referred to the Hawks for criminal investigation, which included the executive director, human resource settlement, was charged, one was discharged, and one company blacklisted with National Treasury and the municipality database. Some of the implicated officials resigned. Other matters are still under litigation, and in some instances, disciplinary processes are still underway. KwaZulu Natal, Newcastle local municipality, corruption and related offenses. 5 accused were arrested. 3 of the accused were convicted, and the matter relating to 1 accused is on site, whilst the warrant of arrest has been issued for the other accused, as he fails to appear in court. Mpumalanga, Bushbuck Richmond local municipality, corruption and related offence. The matter there is in court. Further, the asset forfeiture unit is considering to restrain the pensions of the accused. In Limpopo, Bela local municipality, corruption and related offences. A final written warning was given to the implicated official as part of corrective action. Further criminal cases have already been opened against the implicated officials. Hence, the municipality deemed it not necessary to open a parallel case. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, honourable members, that is update today. The 500 issues, that is update how far and so on.
Thank you, Chairperson, and first of all, let me welcome the Minister to this meeting. It's refreshing to see a Minister who's willing to attend, and I hope that you keep up the participation and interaction with the committee. Good luck on your job ahead of you. You've got a lot of work to do. Chairperson, I have basically five questions. All of these forensic reports relate back to issues that happened before October. In fact, this presentation relates back to forensic reports before October 2014. Now, what are you doing post that date? In other words, are you continually collecting more reports and assessing them, or is that just a cut-off line in the sand and we haven't moved further since then? I mean, we're 4 years down the line. What's happened? Secondly, there seems to be very slow progress on actioning this, and this, I think, is the primary concern of this committee. I see 500 cases here, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of closure on those cases. There doesn't seem to be finalization and disciplinary action and prosecution and. So what's the holdup there? Thirdly, you've assessed 110 out of 120 reports. What happened to the other 10? Have they just disappeared into a puff of smoke? Then, Section 32 of the MFMA is very explicit, and it says that politicians and public officials are liable for irregular, unauthorized, fruitless, and wasted expenditure, and that every effort must be made by the municipality to recover those funds. So, what has been done in that regard to get the money back, and how much has been recovered? Then, how many politicians have formed part of these investigations? What action has been taken against them? I think, for example, of the Mandela funeral scandal in the Eastern Cape. Now, I don't see it mentioned in this report at all. I flipped through the file and I couldn't find Buffalo City mentioned there. Is there a reason for that? And that's only one case that I'm aware of in Buffalo City. There was a whole case prior to the 2011 local government elections where the former mayor initiated a program that spent R1 billion in 6 months. And what's happened about that forensic report? There was boxes and boxes and boxes. I sat on the committee that looked at all these papers and issued recommendations. What's happened with those recommendations? What's happened to those cases? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I also want to take this opportunity to welcome the Minister. I've got two questions. The first one is clarity. Provincially withdrawn, what does that mean? If maybe you can go into detail so that you are able to understand. But also the second question, does the department have been able to collect all the forensic report? If the answer is yes, how many are still outstanding? And what does the department do of ensuring that all the outstanding report are being submitted for evaluation? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Minister, welcome. Chairperson, my request is a clarification question from the department. How far is your power in assisting the provinces and the municipalities in them implementing the recommendations from the forensic audit? I'm saying this looking at the Bilabila issue. Says here, final written warning has been written to those officials. I know it's a trend from departments to give final written warning instead of pursuing the cases that maybe the offenders should bring back the money or pay back the money. I just want to find out the power of the department. Do they have the power to enforce or to force the provinces and municipalities to do better than writing just final duty on it?
Chair, can maybe Chair summarize us, because I can see there are a number of cases here that are pending in court all over. Normally in that situation, people get suspended. Are we not in the same situation here where you find that people have been suspended for the past 4 years, but they are still collecting cash? Are there any other situations in such cases, particularly where the matter is still pending and people are being still pursuing the case? Are there a lot of such cases, or they are not? All those that have been suspended and something has been done with them. I just want to know that, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to welcome the Minister and also appreciate the report today. But mine, I think it will be something for the future, that maybe if we have a data of those that have committed these offences and they have been found guilty in terms of that cooling period analysis, because we've got this experience that a person will commit an offence here, will be charged and we will go to another province. Maybe we will commit an offence in Mpumalanga and go to KZN and get employment. So is there any data of such officials, you know, from municipalities and provinces that have committed such, and where are they, you know, have they been employed somewhere else or what? I think.
Limpopo, I see only two municipalities. Limpopo, out of the whole 500 municipalities here, I see only two from Limpopo. And also, my concern is the proposition in this report that the municipalities must actually make a call for them to be investigated. I don't think that if people are actually involved in corruption, they actually come forward and face it. That is my problem with the self-confidence. Municipalities, I mean the report says municipalities and provinces should actually make a call for them to be investigated. That is what is written here in this report.
Okay. I mean by the Department of Justice.
I'll just touch on them now. I think when it comes to the powers of COGTA in getting involved in the type of sanctions that are delivered to the ground force and so on, you would find that our powers would be pretty much limited, because they go through a process, which is a legal process. And some of it within the bargaining disciplinary precinct. So we wouldn't say no, but that sanction, change it and make it, because then that would be interference and then we'll compromise the justice. But unless if there's this mandatory sanction where, for example, if there's irregular expenditure, or for example, if the person is found to be corrupt and is guilty as such, you cannot give them 1 year, because there's a mandatory sentence. It's far more than that. So unless there are those kinds of cases, then we could be able to say no, but here this looks like it's unfair and so on, and maybe we could suggest review and so on. But otherwise, it would be seen as interfering in their process. But I would allow Mr. Shupin to talk to the, especially the blacklist issue or possible blacklisting of those who are well known to the Dandron official.
Thank you, Chair. Before Mr. Shupin proceeds, I think that there are a couple of things that we need to emphasize very strongly. The first point is that as a department, we have made it clear that there needs to be a zero tolerance approach to corruption. Corruption and good governance, corruption and effective service delivery are simply not compatible with each other. So that must be clear, that we have a very strong stance. I think what the DG was trying to say is that COPTA is not a law enforcement agency. We do not have the power to investigate, we do not have the power to engage in criminal prosecution, etc. What we can do, which we are doing, and I think we can probably do more effectively, is to coordinate between municipalities, provinces, and the national law enforcement agencies. And I think there we would be very open to the inputs from the committee as to how that can happen more effectively. But secondly, I think we need to also always bear in mind that fighting corruption is not, whilst there is a very, very essentially important law enforcement component to it, fighting corruption goes much broader than that. Fighting corruption is at the heart of the back to basics approach. Because if you say that we must put people first, that people must be actively involved in the governance of municipalities, that already, if you do that effectively, that's already limiting the scope of people to get away with corruption. If you say that there must be effective financial management and the department is working very closely with municipalities to ensure, for example, that there are effective municipal public accounts committees, that those committees are established, that they're trained, they're supported, that already strikes another blow at corruption. If we say that as a department we're working closely with National Treasury and provinces to ensure that municipalities are getting unqualified and hopefully eventually clean audits, again that strikes another blow at corruption. It limits the space for corruption to take place. So I think when we talk about what COPTA's powers are, yes, we might not have direct law enforcement agencies, but we do have a strong power to coordinate. And I think, quite frankly, we're underutilizing the power that the Constitution and its applicable law gives us to do that. Secondly, through back to basics, getting those dysfunctional municipalities right and making a big contribution to fighting corruption. And I think also, maybe Mr. Mukashupin, as he answers, I mean, to also talk about utilizing existing statutory powers like Section 106. I mean, I can assure members that whenever there's a complaint that comes in from a member of the public, from a public representative, about allegations concerning malfeasance, we use Section 108 to demand of the relevant MEC to do an investigation and to report back to the minister within a specified time. So I thought, just for the sake of completeness, sketch that context.
Yeah, maybe we'll ask that the specifics on the questions must be responded to. But I want to come back as well on this issue of the power. Excuse me, that it's power enough for us to be able to collate, collect, and then engage what has happened here, because it's a question of overseeing the processes of implementation. It's a question of ensuring that whoever is supposed to do it are doing it. And so we would accept that at a technical level, we do not have the power to prosecute, investigate, etc. But actually, where we located, I think the point that's been raised is correct. There's a lot that will be done on this side. Excuse me. There may well be missing cases, if that's what the members find. We'll just check if anybody can respond to it. But what I want to assure you is that where we think there's something missing, we'll go in and dig it up. So when you come back here, we'll give you the full details. That Buffalo City case was highly publicized. And so if you want to get more details on it and you're not able to respond to it, we're going to go into that. And next time, we'll make sure that it's prioritized and it's made available. Precisely because some of the ones that we read here, we've never heard anything about. But the others which were out in the public, everybody wants to know what happened there, so we'll just follow that up. The issue of actions on politicians, as far as we are aware, there's no reason why anybody should be excluded if there's any action. And unfortunately, I don't think we have gone to a point of saying here that so-and-so is a politician and this is what has been done. But we can try and work on it. I think if you alert the members that collating all of this information is not as simple. So, but because we all have a common interest in getting to that aspect, I will take that and say, let's go in and then see where we can clarify, well, let's deal with it in that kind of way. Because, look, if it's corruption, whoever is involved, doesn't matter what level, the political or administrative leadership, we need to just know. So I don't have any issue there. The question of the recovery of funds, I think there are two aspects to it. On the one side, you've got the asset forfeiture unit, which is obviously dealing with the issues. And the other one, the surcharge that the municipalities must be able to explain if there's been such. And I think we'll go into that. Unless members here can answer that, I don't know. I've not gone into that to be able to get exact specifics on that particular issue. We will be continuing collating all the reports, forensic reports, and doing regular analysis, because there's a whole section in the COPTA that is dealing with the issues of fighting corruption. It's precisely dealing with that issue. So maybe then, if there's an answer now, because I'm not quite certain yet with the members, but if there isn't, we'll come back and say this is where we are. From 2014, these were the cases. There was a 5-year period which I think the members were asked by my predecessor to deal with and table here. And we thought that it was specific to that particular event of the particular 5-year thing. The subsequent ones is something that we can update as we move on. So it's not a problem of updating you with the subsequent issues. So when we get to evaluate them, and when we receive them, I think on a regular basis we'll be able to just share in terms of what's happening. Because as I say, the complexity of this thing means that we must be here when we reach to deal with it. We just discussed with the Director General, because I wanted to get to a point of a whole sense of all the people who are suspended in municipalities, senior managers, municipal managers, CFOs, are very interested in all of it. So we're working on it, so at a particular point, once we have that, we'll be able to talk about it. Obviously, there are two things involved there. The one side are those who would have been suspended because they're involved in certain cases and investigations, and therefore we want to know those, and then we also want to just go deeper into them, just to be able to know when this thing has gone too long and we don't have a resolution, because the problem sometimes is people are suspended for a much longer period and you can't see where the cases or the incidents that brought them to be suspended, when this case is concluded. And so we will be able to deal with that at a certain point. So I think the point that we have raised here will be helpful for us to refine our processes as we actually deal with this matter of fighting corruption. I would still like to ask the senior officials to be able to give us that information. Now, the other issue that you see us just conferring, I'm going to ask somebody just to give us a summary through this one, but the problem on that is IT, they just sent it to improve something that you can't see today quickly, so we'll get them to comment on that. I'll allow the members to take us through as well, and then we can kind of refine the questions as we maybe the answers as we move on.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for allowing me. Thanks for listening to the talk. Let me start in our presentation in relation to the cover of the money. We have indicated that the asset forfeiture is still going through the process of the revolving dealers, and the implementation is as far as indicated that we are waiting the report of the asset forfeiture. So once we see that,
indicate in the outcome of the dispute that the matter is pending and
that particular person should not be considered for reform because there is some, there is an outstanding matter against that particular person. Now, how do we do this? The system that I've already indicated indicates that any other person should be screened and should be screened among other things against the database that is being held by the minister. Now, all municipalities in the country, when they appoint now, they will then send the names of the people that have been shortlisted to check whether those names appear on the database. Now, if they appear on the database, depending on the sanction given to the person, the police will be up to an attempt to check the person. That person will not be made sure to be established status on a regular basis to response to indicate that this person cannot be employed when the person appears on the database. And how do you see that? There are certain balances in the system that will be utilized. Municipalities, after we have written letters to them to indicate that this person appears or does not appear on the database, if the municipality appoints the person against that advice that we have the following. Within 14 days, municipalities must report on the process of employment to the MEC. The MEC must be within 14 days to report to the Minister of Health. Now, when we receive those reports, again, we check it against the database that we have. If they have appointed the person against our advice, we see that this person appears on the page, the name will appear on the database of the person. Then we will then take the minister, advise the minister to write the initiative and take all the actions. This person was not supposed to be employed in there. So for now, since the promulgation of the regulations, we do not have people who are appointed from one person to the other, one they are already in the database, and we can check and balance the situation, ensuring that that has been done. Those are my measures that I wanted to say.
So, Chairperson,
so
the Chairperson, you see, that's when the members raise questions. There's information that we've just did table because we were trying to get more details from our side. But let me give you a sense. It's not always possible to submit the way you're asking, but let me tell you how it is structured. Now, I've got categories of the question has been, are the municipalities acting? It's going to be difficult to go one by one, but I'll give you a summary so that you can then see. Firstly, here we've got all the people who are involved. I will not bother you. There are more than the number of people. You will see the font is small, but you will see when I send it around. So you will have a number of categories. Now, of all the cases, we're not dealing with the forensics only. We're dealing with the forensics and those who investigated locally. That's why it's difficult to separate the way you're asking. But let's go through the issues. The number of cases that have not been finalized in all provinces are 277. Okay? Those are cases where both the forensics and the internal investigation, something is being investigated, and here there are 277 that are not finalized. Then amongst those, we have got a number of staff who resigned prior to the finalization of disciplinary cases. I can break them down on province by province. The total in the country is 127 resigned before finalization of disciplinary proceedings. 127. So I can break it down, for example, and say Eastern Cape is 9, Free State 5, Gauteng 11, KwaZulu-Natal 14, Limpopo 2, Mpumalanga 5, Northern Cape 1, Northwest 7, Cape 73. That's the group of people. Now, if you want the details, each one of those city by city municipality is here. Name, offense, ID number, the state of the nature of the charge, and whether the person resigned or not resigned, was withdrawn, and so on. Then I want to also table the aspect where the people were charged with discriminating against others on the basis of race, gender, and disability. There's only one case, and that happened in the Western Cape. Then there's the cases of people soliciting or accepting gifts
favor or to influence influence exercise or functions, that again we've got one in there. Then what those were convicted in court for more than 12 months without fine, the total there is three. It's basically one in the Western Cape, two in the Northwest. Then there's a breach of code of conduct for municipal staff. They have got 1,446. I won't bother with the breakdown. But that's what you have. And then there are those who use official position for private gain or benefit. There are only two. Then you've got those who are involved in assault and sexual harassment. The total is 11. The total is 28. And of course, the numbers vary from province. Some don't have, some do. Then you've got gross misconduct involving dishonesty and gross negligence. The total for the whole country is 186. Then financial misconduct, corruption or fraud. The total is 290. Then the number of those who have dismissed staff for misconduct in the whole country, 1,264. So in the Western Cape, 913, in Northwest, 16, in Northern Cape, 39, in Mpumalanga, 34, Limpopo, 21, KwaZulu-Natal, 51, Gauteng Province, 81, Free State, 5, Eastern Cape, 59. So this summary precedes the details of the individuals who are here. I'll set it around. But again, as said, this is just for members, because when we deal with corruption, you know, my point on corruption has always been, corruption is corruption, you know. You got us one side and corruption one side, and we must act in the same way. It doesn't matter who we are, we must deal with the issue on the basis of the scales that we want to eliminate, and that's the approach we have to take. So I will send this around just for members to deal with, but it does not undermine the fact that there are some of the issues where members are still interested in specifics. We can go into that. Now this database, specifically on the area of the corruption, you will see also that in some cases it says dismissal, but it then says not resigned. That means the appeal processes are not finalized. It's not like someone has just ignored it. Appeal processes are still pending. Then in some cases it says pending. It basically means that you can't say what the ultimate thing was, the process is still ongoing. And therefore you can't put a cut-off line. You can just say at this point this is what we've got. The other point was raised about the processes being slow. Look, that you would always expect. Firstly, the police complain that they need lots of information, corroboration, and witnesses to be able to take the case through. So the fact that the thing is slow is because of the way the investigation by police goes. That's the one side. The second side is that if you deal with the disciplinary processes, there's quite a bit of filibuster that tends to happen. You know, sick note on the last day, so the thing is rescheduled. No, we're changing lawyers, and then the thing gets rescheduled. No, I'm not happy with this. No, and then the union will say, look, we want this approach and that and so on. So those are the things that are involved. We can't really account for the process being too slow. We must just know that it can be slow, but when we're specific about what, we'll go into that one, what happened here. And then if the members are looking at that, then it's fine. We will always provide that information. I'll pass this on to you, Chairperson, so that members can just expect the report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Very helpful. Yeah, because I think members are just about the progress of implementation. And I think then we have indicated the progress of implementation, what are the challenges, what are the issues.
If I may, just two quick follow-ups. The first is, I didn't get an answer as to why there were 10 reports that haven't been assessed.
There is an answer.
Okay. And the second question, Chair, the second question is, of those 110 that have been assessed, the reports, so I'm not talking about the cases. I mean, I understand that one report might have 50 cases arising out of it, but how many of those reports have you finalized and said, that's done, we can move on? Do you understand what I'm asking? So out of 110 reports that were assessed by the department, how many have you concluded and moved on? My third question, and this relates to what the minister was just talking about, and that was about the dismissals for gross misconduct, and you indicated that of 1,200 dismissals, some 960, I think, were in the Western Cape. Now, how does that indicate that the Western Cape has a massive corruption problem, which I personally don't believe, or the Western Cape is much harder and much more willing to take decisive action against corrupt officials? I don't know which it is, and maybe you can give us some insight into that.
I didn't think you'd let that go. Let me tell you this, honourable member. We don't run municipalities or provinces, we take reports. And secondly, I think that it's a good question to ask when you meet the premiers and the mayors and ask them why you find less and the others and find more. My approach is very simple, and that is when there's action to be taken, it shall be taken. What the real problem is, I don't think we can do anything. I think the members can argue about who fires more in which party and with that. I don't want to get entangled into that. What we've got is what you have there. So let's keep it at that, and we will not answer on behalf of the different parties that run provinces. What I think we need to please for your patience on. You see, the thing of saying this report is closed, finalized, finished. It's easier from where you sit. It's not easy from where we sit. What happens here is that if there's a report, let's say it involved two people, three people, then we got them investigated by the police, but weren't able to get them charged and dismissed. So we'll report that everyone is dismissed. But we can't close the case until the police have done this on the convicted people. So you will not get a situation where this report closed, finished, quite closed. No. That's why we said the minister had the same difficulty in presenting this matter because of this. Now, these two things that we've given you mean that we can only go to a point of dealing with the individual case. Then we say this case is closed. When the case is closed, it's fine. But whether that case is closed is the only one from that report is another issue. So it's a bit difficult. What I intend doing, though, is that we will be visiting provinces and meeting with the leaders of provinces, premiers and MECs, and probably mayors at different levels, and say, look, this matter we take it very seriously. This is a fight against corruption. We've seen the work that we've done. We want to need this kind of updates, and there's this other work that is outstanding, new, more reports that are coming through, and these are the actions that we'd like to see happening, what are we going to do, what are we going to do, and then at which point we get regular reports. But I don't think members will ever get the satisfaction of a report that will come in and say it's false closed as easily as that. What you're going to have is that these cases are closed on the basis of wherever they would have come from, because each one reported on several people, and the cases are not necessarily the same. You're dealing with an instance where you have one case of corruption, like you talk about Nelson Mandela, as it were. If people are combined in one case, it's easy. But when you do a forensic investigation, you might find that the general sleaze that's gone on is the misconduct of several people who are involved in different unrelated activities that have colluded to create a particular outcome in the conduct of the municipality or their finances. So we'd say that there's a problem with the way the municipality is run. But in fact, the contribution comes from that group and that group and that group. And when we deal with them, each one of them is a separate case. And therefore, when we want to close the report one time, it may not be that easy. So I don't think we must judge the department on that basis. I think we must judge the department on the basis of, are we seeing progress? And are we seeing shortfalls that must be corrected? Then I'm going to ask that the question of why 110 instead of 120, well, there's a clear explanation, but let's ask the members to deal with it. And, I think if there's anything outstanding, the Chairperson will already.
Thank you, Minister. The question of the 10, once we did the assessment, SIU was of opinion that the other 10, forensic reports that were there, there were no sufficient evidence to pursue those cases. That is why the indicated that some of the cases were then pursued because the FLU with the expertise, when they looked in those reports, they indicated that we can't pursue this one, so we indicated that in our presentation too.
Okay.
plenty reports submitted. So now you're saying something different. Now you're saying that those 10, they were assessed, but there was nothing that could be done about it. There was not enough evidence. Am I understanding it correctly? Because, I mean, if I read, let me just get to the slide. Out of the 120, it's on slide 2, out of the 120 copies received, 110 have been assessed. That implies to me that 10 have not been assessed, that you haven't done anything with them. I might be misunderstanding here. If they have been assessed and it's been decided that there's no action that can be taken, that's one thing. But if they have not been assessed, I want to know why they haven't been assessed.
No, I think we're misunderstanding each other. 120 were received and assessed. 10 of them, the SIU did not feel that you can take them further. The 110 is what we're here about. Now, the fact that there's a forensic report does not on its own confirm wrongdoing. It confirms that an evaluation has been done, but whether there's a need to pursue, charge, or discipline anyone, it's a thing that will come. So in other words, I think it's a highly efficient process here, because of 120, only 10 could be put aside to say, we don't need to act here. But I don't think that there's a huge issue, it's just a misunderstanding of how the matter has been tabled. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Cooperate in that spirit, because we believe that is worth sharing the information. If we have to account for details, we'll do that. But thank you very much. We'll still go back to the Buffalo City and get some information, and we'll make that available to the members. Thank you very much for the engagement.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Minister. For your first meeting with a very detailed report.
I think Coke is the food department. Where I am, I feel always. You said you are robust, so I'll wait for that.
Colleague, let us move to our second item on our agenda.
Thank you very much. Now, I'll ask Mr. Shipping to also speak to the details, but I think, as we all know, this matter arises out of the fact that the Constitutional Court confirmed the declaration of invalidity of the Municipal Systems Amendment Act. It did so on the 9th of March 2017, and that act was declared invalid because the legislature had mistagged the bill as a Section 75 when it should have been tagged as a 76 bill. So as a department, we've taken the view that the relief granted by the Crown Court was against the legislature, that it is up to the legislature to do the tagging exercise again. And I think there is some urgency attached to that happening and that process proceeding, because the deadline, the invalidity was suspended for 24 months. That 24 months comes to an end on the 9th of March 2019. So time indeed is not on our side. The former minister from Bruin has written to the speaker to raise those matters, but maybe Mr. Shipping will respond to that. Thank you.
Thanks, DM. I've already made this presentation before the Portfolio Committee, so I may not bore the members with the presentation. Safe to say that we are in contact with the parliamentary legal services. Our legal services and the parliamentary services are in contact in relation to the process going forward. We are awaiting the committee, the technical committee, to do that, so that ourselves and the parliamentary legal services will then give technical support to Parliament in relation to the constitution process. So that's very really last.
The point of GTC is that taking it, the most interesting, can take us 2 minutes to say 76 or 75. The point that all that members are raising is that, do you have any other substantive issues that you want to add? If it is about taking 75, 76, it's not an issue at all. Unless there are substantive issues that you want to propose as a department.
Yeah.
And therefore, if there are substantive issues, you need to design a process. The process of public hearing, sometimes there is substantive issues. If there are just technical issues, language issues, it's a separate issue. Because that's what we should do, because much is around the point. If you have to take it to provinces because you have substantive amendment that you want to propose, you have to take it to the committee itself, also public hearing, all those matters. They take longer than just taking. Taking is 1 day, 1.5 days. In fact, 30 minutes you can take it. Because you know now the court declared it is now 76, it's not 75. Therefore, taking it to the easy, joint taking mechanism in Parliament and do it tomorrow. The point I think was, are there any substantive issues that you want to put in this amendment? If there are, and then considering anyway time better, how do we move about that? That's an issue really that I think we are much interested about, not the other issues that are there. Yes.
Thank you,
Chairman.
Thank you, statement in the portfolio committee the last time in relation to other matters that we substantive matters that we may want to include in this process. We informed the portfolio committee that based on the time frame and the little time that we have in relation to this, we are not going to put more new things into this particular process. But the matter separate process may move in relation to introducing substantive issues in this environment.
No, it's a little more than what you wanted to information on. Because then the letter really is in there. If I know that it's going to be forwarded, we're going to take the mechanism. And therefore, once they've done that, the matter is closed. But the main thing is what you wanted to do is to raise some of the issues that one remain, but time won't allow us to do so. Simply means that next term, because our term is ending next year. Next year is around 10 calls. I think that's why Kabasa, we have to extend our time a little bit. Because next year is too much, it's too short for us. 5 years is too short. And I think that's what the Chinese leadership is looking at that. But the point that I'm facing is that then what we do is to then return it accordingly. And then because we are in touch with our legal service team, they must speed it up, then close it, because it shouldn't be, the court must never then rule against us, failing just to say 76, 75, when they've already said it shouldn't be an issue really on that. You should comply sooner than yesterday and close it. If there are issues that we want to raise, of course we'll touch the office. That's where we show that we have in charge of the situation. Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Chair, thank you. I'm very pleased to hear that because I do think it will speed up the process if all we're going to do is re-tag the bill and put it through the NCOP and the provinces as a 76 bill. I am concerned that the presentation that I received had a whole lot of substantive issues that it wanted, that had at least three substantive issues that it wanted included. And Deputy Minister, you're shaking your head, but I mean, I'm looking at the presentation in front of me. Now, I'm okay with us discussing substantive issues, but I think that should be a separate process. And so let's move ahead on the proposal that you put forward. We re-tag, we get this done quickly, we get it done before the end of this year, and then we can look at substantive issues. I am concerned, though, Chair, if I may take this opportunity, at the slow process in legislative amendment and reform in this department. These substantive issues that I'm looking at here have been discussed now for 3 years, maybe longer. There's legislation that has been on the back burner for a long time. I'm talking the NC bill, and Deputy Minister Nell knows my feelings about this one. Support and intergovernmental monitoring support and intervention bill. There's the customary initiation bill, which all of these are things that are taking a long time to process, and I think that as a department, COGTA needs to be cognizant that we need to up our game as far as processing legislation, developing legislation, and amending legislation.
No, I think we would. Let me say that I think in developing legislation, one always has to strike a balance between moving expeditiously, but also at the same time being thorough, inclusive, and consultative. Sometimes to hasten a little bit slowly does pay dividends in the long run. But having said that, I think we do take note of the concern raised by the member. I can just say that the initiation bill was approved by Cabinet last week, so it is on its way to Parliament. Also that some of the other legislation that's been in the pipeline for some time is also at a very, very advanced stage. It would be going to Cabinet soon. With regard to things like the IMSI bill, I don't think this is the time or the place to dwell into those things, but I think the member is also aware. not the technical process, the legislation is drafted. I mean, that's not what is holding it up. I think the member would have appreciation for some of the complexities involved there. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Just to endorse the comments that the Deputy Minister has made, I think, yes, indeed, the traditional initiation bill has passed through, as we've heard, and I hope that process goes on. But there's lots of issues, and I don't want us to even get there, because there have been lots of issues. I will undertake that we'll move on to just check what's happened on the other bills that have been raised. But I do agree with the Deputy Minister that, you know, the stakeholders to satisfy in the country are so diverse and many that I think we must accept that a thorough process of consultation can be more useful than rushing to Parliament. Not to say that we should move with speed, but I think we must understand that the cost of democracy is actually the thoroughness of the consultation and the time that we have to dedicate to that process. So we will follow those processes around. But I'm very pleased to hear that there is an understanding now on the matter of this bill and the tagging issue, and that we're going to be focusing specifically on just tagging and going back through the process again. But that the Honourable Member is relaxed with the issue, because I thought you were threatening me on this particular topic. Now, maybe they must agree that COPTA is a good department. No, it's okay, you don't touch it, but let's agree that COPTA is a good department.
So, I think my man have always accepted that COPTA is an anchor department. And very happy with that. Of course, there is his own question about some of the issues. And I think we have really covered the agenda. And I think the forensic report is very helpful for us. At least all of us now, we can explain where we are in terms of the situation, but also the complexity of it in terms of 500 people. You can't get rid of it very easily, because in one case, sometimes there are 17 accomplices. Some are sleeping there in terms. Then you have to investigate the refinement of them and that is. And then I think what work has been done, I think there's commitment to the department to deal with the question of corruption and coordinate with all our sister departments in some of the areas that we live there. And then I think we are satisfied with the report. Of course, we are updated from time to time. When there are new information, the Buffalo City one, I think there will be follow-up on that. We'll be dealt with that one. And I think, again, as the Honourable Chairman, we're putting it that metros are very important for us. Because if metros can put their house in order, the likelihood for us to start dealing with poverty, unemployment, and many other issues, economic development is very high. Because our understanding, Minister, is that also one of the areas of our back to basics is number six now. You added local economic development. I just think that we must have some discussion on that when we have time. Possible can have a workshop. And then just to discuss exactly what is it that we want to do for local economic development. And then how does the department that is taking care of this is doing it in a literal way, because pronouncing this problem, not doing it, is a bigger problem than there. Because it can't be part of back to basis. But at the same time, generally there's no feeling. How are we doing it in a practical sense in terms of local economic development? I think we must look at it and have some discussion. And then I think what they did is very easy then, that it's taking only division, just taking, and then we'll wait for next parliamentary. And then we may be lucky that Medhem and others are not back. Therefore, you find it very easy to put it in. And then we'll find it easy to put it in and work it out nicely. But next year then, maybe after election, you put the substantive nature of it and then ensure that it starts working. We amend it accordingly. We
we understood also Honourable Minister saying that the customary initiation one also is in the process. And of course that one would need very thorough consultation, we agree with you, as well the country, what provinces, because it's very complex. And we have given the fact that he never has raised other issues, that ourselves now think we can comfortable another issue, I think we must deal with it. We take the point that you are going to assist us also to link up with the traditional leaders and discussion with them. And then as the Honourable President also contact the department to work on this. We think it would be far easier for us to start working on that. Because they are very cooperative though when we are conducting our public hearings on the COEX traditional leadership field. Traditional leaders are very cooperative on some of this. I think the more we engage them, the more so then how we can. But though, Minister, we still have to discuss, and Honourable Nehru has already developed a paper, I don't know, in Melham, what is the role of traditional leaders and traditional democrats that is broadly republican, broadly republican. And then, because we are not a monarchy, we are a republican. And then many members of parliament also are republican themselves. And then what is the role of the structure of this? We have not discussed it correctly ourselves. Then when we meet with them, it's hit and run. The day of doing that, they end up placating, because we have to give them some carrots. At the same time, you corrode the issues that are there. I think it's important for us to have some discussion on some of those issues. Because I think they're always ready to be engaged. And then I think the point that you are raising, that you are committed to engage with them, is a very important issue. And then we have engaged with communities. But also I know that the issue also that is very, not that it can belong also to our department because of local economic development, in the mining areas and communities, it's a bigger problem. And the tribal council taking over the role of communities is a bigger issue. So we have to deal with this issue. And good luck, Minister, I think we'll be able to deal with the Gonyama issue. And then I think we'll be dealing with some of those issues.
Gonyama agenda first.
And then I will cut across all the boundaries.
Well, thank you for the compliment. That's still the same affairs.
Okay.
No, colleagues, I think we have come to the end of our meeting. We have one of the meetings I can invite you to the overall of the
No, Chairperson, thank you very much. I want to say thank you to the members. I really want us to deal with issues, to deal with them professionally and friendly. And so members should feel free to communicate with us so that you can provide information and clarify issues, even if it's in between, so that when we get to the meetings, we must make progress. And must be able to meet the expectations of the members because we knew what are the issues that they would have liked us to focus on and deal with. We've highlighted a number of members, Honourable Chairperson. All of those issues are in our to-do list. We won't spend time going through them, but I can only say I agree with you. There are substantive issues which we must deal with. The issue of local economic development, understanding it in the context, not in the context that we're talking about small business. We are talking about investment, job creation, economic inclusivity, all of that we need to deal with as an issue. So we're going to do our bit and then at some point we'll then share compare notes and then probably sit down and look at what approaches we want to take on that. Excuse me, the issue of land is very sensitive. And as much as we're talking about the issue of Ngonyama, effectively we're talking about land issues. And in its breadth and width, it's a matter that this parliament has pronounced last week upon it. And the fact that we disagree and it's sensitive, it actually reflects exactly what's going on the ground on the same issue. It will always be a problem to come back to this country 50 years' time to come. The issue of land will be a big issue. You
cope, and 200 years, the issue of land was a big issue. If you look at the fighting, the wars, and the creation of the various dispensations in this country, it was around the issue of land. And so we'll never be able to get away from that issue. And I think what's important is for us to say, what is the best way for us to be able to coexist? You're raising a very sensitive issue of traditional leaders in a democracy. It's a matter that was outstanding that we need to talk about and say, what is it that we need to do? Understanding the various interests in the country, various traditions, the various systems that have to be merged together to create this democracy, and understand that we'll not have anything perfect. So we have to deal with it. So I agree with you as well on that. So I think from the point of view of the committee, we'll pick up some of those issues and then continuously interact with yourselves. But I just want to say to the members of this team, you will find us open and accessible, and you will find it possible for us to share views. I think when we get to these meetings, we must have a full sense of the expectations of the committee so that we can provide as much information as is needed. And that will make progress and it will take us forward. So thank you very much with the support, interaction, and the comments and engagement from the committee. On behalf of our team, we want to say thank you, Chairperson.
And thank you very much, colleagues. Thank you very much. I think there's tea outside. Members can enjoy and you can engage the minister as we discussed today. Thank you very much for attendance and your contribution. Thank you for this.
So just to say for members of the media, some of those numbers that we were rattling out here, we'll do a statement to just make sure that we keep the contact so they can send it to you with the numbers so you don't mix them up. We'll just make that available. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Members.